Hi there, my name is Njeri Mbogwa and I'm the host of Crime and Consequence KE, a true crime podcast. We tell the life stories of our victims, who they were, what happened to them, and why they still matter. Our place today are Sospita Opio Muganda, the victim, and Sylvia Atieno Ouma, our accused person. And this story takes place on the 29th of June, 2022, somewhere called Mungaini area in Njeru sub-county within Nairobi County. A trigger warning to our listeners, this episode discusses gender-based violence. These topics may be distressing and triggering to some viewers, and listener discretion is advised. Okay, let's get into it. At the time of the incident, Sospita and Sylvia have been married for 5 years and they have two kids. Their first child is 3 years old and the second child was only 8 months old. One of the prosecution's key witnesses was Sospita and Sylvia's caretaker. And she was identified as Agnes Wanzia Mwangangi, and she kind of lived next to the couple. So during her testimony, she says that initially Sospita moved into the building alone, but then after some time, he brought his wife and his kids. According to her, the two stayed in peace just for a very short time, but then they started fighting, and their fights would get so bad that at some point she had to go break them up and warn them that if you continue fighting, I'm just going to have to kick you out of the apartment. On 29th of June, it was a Wednesday, around 6 p.m., Agnes was outside and she was washing utensils when she sees Sospita get home from work. She is outside in just within the building with a few other women and a man who's identified as Boniface Upili. So Sospita comes into the apartment, goes into his house for a little bit, but then eventually he comes outside and he joins Agnes and the other women and Boniface. So Agnes has finished washing her utensils and now she's somewhere outside the building burning trash. So that's when Sospita joins them. And so he comes with his own trash and they're all throwing it away and they want to burn it together. And as they're doing that, Sospita starts to complain that Sylvia does not cook for him. And Agnes asks him a very important question, because Agnes is like, okay, but do you provide the food for her to cook? Because apparently, one of the biggest reasons why they had been fighting was because Sospita was saying that Agnes does not cook food. I'm sorry, Sospita was saying that Sylvia does not cook food. But then Sylvia was like, you never give me money to cook food. So what food am I cooking if I don't have money? So after this, after Agnes asks him, do you provide the food for this woman to cook? Sospita doesn't really answer. So he leaves the group and he heads back to his house. So Agnes thinks that he's going to take a matchbox so that he can come and burn his own garbage. But then about 5 or 10 minutes later, she wasn't very sure, Sylvia comes out of the house and she's holding a knife. When Agnes and Boniface and all the other women see her, Agnes asks her, "Umeua," which translates to "you killed" in English. And Sylvia replied, "Niya menza vita," which translates to "it's Peter who started it all," like it's Peter who started the fight. So the group that was outside, they rush back into the apartment, and that's where they find Sospita lying outside, just outside his door, and he's face down and he's not moving. So Boniface, the man that was with the women, he rushes to try and get a bodaboda to take Sospita to hospital. But when the bodaboda guy comes and sees Sospita, he refuses to help and says that this is a police case. So after he says this, Boniface rushes to go and inform the police of what has happened. And at this time, according to Agnes's testimony, she says that Sylvia was completely shaken up and she had actually wet her clothes, like she'd conjured on herself. And I guess the bodaboda guy must have alerted people, or somehow a lot of people knew about the incident, so a mob started to form in the apartment and they wanted to lynch, they wanted to do mob justice to Sylvia. So Agnes kind of had to protect Sylvia until the police got there. And at this time, Sospita is, he's not moving, he's not speaking, he's just lying motionless, face down outside his apartment. So Boniface eventually gets the police and they come and they take the Sospita's body and they take the knife. Sylvia had kind of dropped it at the staircase in the middle of all that commotion. So they come and they pick everything. The knife that Sylvia had a blue handle, and Agnes actually testified that it was her knife. It was not Sylvia's. Sylvia's knife. She had left it outside her house because remember she was washing clothes. She was washing utensils outside, and so she left all her clean utensils just outside her door before she went to burn her garbage. So when Agnes was questioned about the nature of the relationship between Sylvia and Sospita, she testified that the two of them would fight really, really often. And Sospita would get very violent towards Sylvia. And this would be physical violence. Like, he would beat her so badly that at one point, Agnes testifies that Sylvia could not go outside for a week because of how badly bruised she had been from fighting with Sospita. Agnes added that Sylvia had made several reports to the police about the abuse that she faced, but the police were yet to really do anything. And Agnes also testified that Sylvia would occasionally tell her that they had no food in the house because Sospita was not living or bringing in any money for them to have food in the house. And remember that she's an 8-month-old and she has a 3-month-old. And I'm sure she's still breastfeeding her 8-month-old. And so the woman needs to eat, you know what I mean? When Agnes is asked if she witnessed the stabbing, she says that she did not witness the stabbing, so she couldn't really tell how that whole incident went down. How she knows that Sospita came home, then he was outside with them, then he said that his wife doesn't give him food, he went back to the house and he never came back out. Another one of the prosecution's witnesses was Boniface Opili, the man who was in that group with Agnes and the rest of the women. And he was also a neighbor of Sospita and Sylvia. And he testified, he corroborated Agnes's story and said that the two would fight very often. And he had even tried to counsel them and counsel his friend about settling their differences in other ways that don't involve physical violence. So after Sospita was stabbed, he went and called the police. And one of the officers who came to the scene of the crime was identified as Isaac Andere. And he said that at around 8 p.m., he received a report that a lady had stabbed her husband. And together with other officers, they went to the scene. That's when they found this really huge crowd of people. And to protect Sylvia, first of all, they had to separate her from the people. And then they later arrested her. So the police get there, they secure the scene, they recover the knife. And then they inform the CSI from Kayole to go and process the scene. So after this, as I've said, the police had to separate Sylvia from the mob and then arrest her. And they took her to Kayole police station, then took the body of Sospita to Mama Lucy Hospital. At Mama Lucy Hospital, an autopsy of Sospita's body was conducted on July 7th, 2022 by government pathologist Dr. David Atandi. So the doctor stated that the body had been well preserved and there was evidence of a peripheral cyanosis, which is a lack of blood, a 2-centimeter wide and 9-centimeter deep stab wound on the left side of the chest, and no further external injuries. He said Sospita's left side of the chest was filled with blood as the stab wound went through the left ventricle of the heart and the right ventricle, terminating at the right lobe of the liver. The injury resulted into massive bleeding in the abdominal cavity, and there was about 3 liters of blood. So he concluded that the cause of death was exsanguination due to a single stab wound to the chest, and exsanguination is the fatal loss of blood. So after the post-mortem is conducted, because the post-mortem is conducted on after the post-mortem is conducted, the police request for a forensic analysis. So during the post-mortem, they request the doctor to get a blood sample, and then on that same day, they take that blood sample to government analyst, who was identified as Margaret Wahau Minor, and she received the knife and the blood sample and was requested to determine the presence and origin of the blood stains on the knife and if they match to the blood sample that she had been given, which was Sospita's blood. So when Margaret was testifying, she said that she received the blue knife in a khaki envelope, the blood sample in a bottle, and buccal swabs from Sylvia. And at this point, I was kind of wondering why would they put the knife in a khaki envelope, because it's those brown envelopes, right? Like, how good is that for the evidence, for preserving the evidence? But then I was like, at this point, the blood has probably dried on the knife, so it's not really the most ideal way to store that kind of evidence. But if the blood has dried, then maybe it was ideal. I don't know. The samples are sent for forensic analysis on July 2nd of 2022, but they don't get a report back from the government's analyst until 18th October 2023. So the analyst reports that the knife was moderately stained with human blood and the blood matched the sample provided. Which was question of the delay, because this is a really long time for us to be waiting for this analysis to get back to us. She stated that they were having challenges with reagents and there was a really, really big backlog of analyses that needed to be done. And so that's why the analysis took close to a year for them to finish everything. Actually, more than a year, right? Because it's July 7th, 2022, and they get it back in October 18th of 2023. So that's a year and some change. So before this forensic analysis came back, the postmortem was conducted on July 7th of 2022. On July 12th of 2022, Sylvia was taken for a mental health assessment and she was found fit to stand trial. After the prosecution provided their witnesses and they provided the evidence, the court found that Sylvia had a case to answer and she was put on the defense. So now let's go listen to Sylvia's defense. Sylvia chose to give a sworn testimony, and remember we said that a sworn testimony is taken under oath, right? So that is when they say that, you know, I swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God. And it differs from an unsworn testimony, because an unsworn testimony is basically the defendant or whoever is giving the testimony just giving their account of events of what happened, but that can be used as evidence. But in a sworn testimony, it can be used as part of evidence because you are doing it under oath and it carries legal weight. Okay, so Sylvia chooses to give a sworn testimony in her defense, and she says that she was a businesswoman and she was married to Sauce Peter, and they'd been married for about 5 years. They had two children together. On the day of the incident, when Sauce Peter gets home, remember, Sauce Peter gets home and Agnes is the first person who sees him. So Sylvia is actually in Agnes's house when Sauce Peter gets home, and so when she hears him speaking outside, that's when she comes from Agnes's house into her apartment. And she asks him for money for food. When she follows him into the house and asks him for money for food, she says that he started to quarrel and started hurling insults at her. And because she just didn't want to have another argument with him, she says that she decided to go back to Agnes's house. So when Suspita sees her going back to Agnes's house, he follows her into Agnes's house and he starts beating her. And despite her pleas for him to stop, he continued. So at some point, she says that Suspita was trying to strangle her. And she was really crying for help, really crying for somebody to come and help her. But nobody was coming to help her. And in trying to escape, she says that she falls near Agnes's utensils, which were outside. And that's when she sees the knife and takes it because she wants to defend herself. So she picks up the knife and tries to use it to get him to stop beating her. But then when Suspita sees that she has the knife, he charges at her and then they start to struggle over the knife. So as they're struggling, she says that they fell down. And as they go down, the knife was still in her hand. So they fall down. When she gets up, she says that that's when she realizes that she had actually stabbed him. So what she does is that she pulls the knife from his chest and then runs to alert the neighbors and try to get some help. And here's where I think that, well, she probably didn't know, but it would have been better for her to leave the knife where he had been stabbed, because that then would kind of control the bleeding. Because once you remove the knife, then like the person just starts bleeding and bleeding and bleeding. So I think she should have just left the knife in place where it was and then gone to call for some help and come back and tried to, like, you know, put pressure on and stabilize so that, you know, he's maybe not moving too much or he's not trying to remove it himself. But as I said, she probably did know this. You know, she saw that she stabbed him, she freaked out, she just pulled it out. And that's when he probably really started to bleed out and he unfortunately bled to death. So she has stabbed him. She stabbed him and she's going to find help, right? And that's when now Agnes's account kind of comes into place. We were outside and then, you know, we saw her, and that's when I asked her Moa and she said all those things. So when Sylvia was arrested, she went to the police to give her statement, and she said that her marriage was very, very abusive. She said that Sospita would come home drunk, he would fight with her and often Very often he would beat her very badly. And despite making several reports to the police, nothing was ever done. In her testimony, she asked the court to forgive her because A, she did not intend on stabbing Sospita. She was trying to defend herself. And B, she had two small children. She still has the 3-year-old and the 8-year-old who are very, very dependent on her. Okay, so now let's go to the judgment. The case was heard before Judge Alexander Musava Muteti, who said that Sylvia was charged with murder contrary to Section 203 as read with 204 of the Penal Code. The prosecution carried the burden of proof in this case, which means that they had to prove that she is the one who committed this murder beyond any reasonable doubt. There could not have possibly been anybody else but her. So after listening to everything, the judge said that despite Agnes's claim that Sospita was not Agnes, despite Sylvia's claim that Sospita was stabbed as they fell down, the government pathologist who conducted the postmortem said the injury could not have resulted from a fall or be self-inflicted. He said, and I quote, "The prosecution proved that the deceased and the accused were the only ones together when the incident happened. The court is thus left with the circumstantial evidence surrounding the incident of stabbing, which evidence is to be carefully weighed against the defense of the accused. The circumstances irresistibly point to the fact that the deceased was stabbed by the accused. The two were wrestling together as admitted by the accused and there was no third party involved." The judge went on to say that after the stabbing, Sylvia had run to the neighbors, but she did not tell them that Sospita had stabbed himself. Remember that Agnes asked her Umewa and she said that it's Sospita who had started the fight. So the judge said in the quote, "Even though no one witnessed the stabbing, clearly the statement by the accused was an admission that she had fought with the deceased. Nothing would have been easier than for her to tell the witnesses who sat outside that in the course of the tussle, the deceased fell and injured himself in the process. The accused having failed to do so, she must have weaved the theory of a fall to conveniently try and extricate herself from the matter. At best, that was an afterthought. The accused also testified that as they wrestled with the deceased and the deceased was attempting to strangle her and she remained at top of the deceased as they fell." So when she said, so what the judgment was that when Agnes said that Sospita was trying to strangle her and they're fighting, when they were going down, she fell on top of him. So Sospita was not on top of her, where she would have been trapped under him. All right, I continue. "The pathologist testified as to the depth and trajectory of the injury, and the same was consistent with the positioning of the deceased vis-a-vis the accused on the ground. He ruled out self-infliction of the injury. He ruled out self-infliction of the injury by the deceased as claimed by the accused." Because somewhere in her defense, Sylvia said that, I think I mentioned this, Sylvia said that maybe as they fell down, he stabbed himself, or as they fell down, somehow the knife, you know, like she didn't intentionally stab him as they were fighting and falling. But then the government pathologist, I remember, I don't know, I forgot to put this in the story. I remember the government pathologist, he was asked when he was giving his testimony and he said explicitly, he actually said, "I'm 100% certain that there is no way that this was self-inflicted or caused by them falling down. Like this was somebody intentionally stabbing somebody else." The judge concluded that Sylvia had stabbed Sospita, and he added that anyone in Sylvia's position would have also defended themselves, but stabbing him in the chest was reckless and she should have known there was greater risk of death by striking him directly at the heart. He said, and I quote, "The degree of injury leaves no doubt that the force used was great, the weapon used was dangerous, and that the result was devastating and fatal. Simply put, the degree of force used to ward off the deceased was disproportionate considering that the accused was atop the deceased. She had the opportunity to flee from his grip but instead stabbed him right in the chest, striking at the heart, thereby causing death," he added. "The accused person could have avoided causing the death by fleeing from the scene after she subdued the deceased. The accused could still have run to the neighbors outside immediately. The deceased went down further. She was not candid with the court by suggesting that the deceased may have fallen on the knife and injured himself. Honesty is key, for it would help the court address its mind fully on all the facts, but to attempt to skew the facts in favor of oneself is to act deceitfully, and the court does not look at such litigants with a merciful eye." So let me tell you something. Let me just say this, because I have to say this whole part really, really triggered me, because it felt like the blame was Sylvia's. His death was her fault, right? But it felt like the judge was saying that, how do I say this? I want to be very, very careful how I say this. It kind of felt that he was kind of, I don't like how he said that you could have just gotten up and run to your neighbors. You know, after you guys fell down, you could have just gotten up and run away and removed yourself from the situation. Because remember, this is a man who's constantly beating on you, okay? He's constantly, and I'm sure it's just not physical violence. It's emotional violence. It's the verbal abuse. It's the hitting you, you know? And this is a man who has beaten you and the neighbors have spoken to him. Like, at this point, you know that there's nothing big that your neighbors are going to do for you. At the end of the day, you still have to sleep in bed with that man. You still have to live in the same house with that man. Okay, and I'm not saying that stabbing him was the solution, but I'm also saying that it was a bit reckless for the judge to be like, why didn't you just run away? You know, it's giving the same vibes of when somebody's sexually assaulted and then they ask you, what were you wearing? What did you do? You know, because these are questions. Ask any survivor of sexual abuse. The first thing you asked, you know, because, and so I feel like, I just feel like I didn't like it. It was a bit of a trigger for me because the psychology of abuse and what abuse does to somebody is so complex that you kind of watching it all down to, why didn't you run and go ask for help? You know, see, he was down. Why didn't you just run away? I think it's oversimplification of something so much more complex. It's the oversimplification of something that was so much more complex. Because you have to ask yourself, she's endured so much abuse. She has two small children. She's probably still breastfeeding. Like, there's so much going on with this woman. And she's living with a man who does not provide for her, but still expects that everything he wants and desires should be provided to him. Okay? And I just didn't like it. I didn't like this part. And I especially didn't like how he finished it by saying that, oh, if you just told us the truth, we would have been more merciful towards you. Like what? What do you mean? You know? Like, what do you... Anyway, let's move on. And I also just felt some type of way. And again, this could be my bias and this is just my opinion. I felt some type of way that it was a man judging this case. And not to say that, you know, men can't be empathetic towards the violence that women face in the hands of men. But, like, what do you mean, why didn't I run away? How many times do you think she'd probably run away from this man? How many times do you think she'd run to those same neighbors? And she still had to go back to that same house. Like, how many times do you think that had happened? And for you to conclude that, oh, if you just run away, none of this would have happened. Well, probably Sospita would not have been stabbed, right? But would the violence against her have ended? Would she have been safe? Would her kids have been safe? Would they have been provided for the basic needs that they need to survive? Because how are you beating me, the mother of your 3-year-old and your 8-month-old, who's probably breastfeeding your children, right? And it seems like I'm a stay-at-home mom who does tuvi barua. And it seems like you are the provider of the house because you go to work every day. And then when you come back and you find there's no food because you didn't leave any money for food and you haven't come back with any food, then somehow the aggression and the frustration of why you can't provide, it kind of becomes my fault. And then you take it out all on me. And I've gone to the police several times. I've reported. He beat me. Oh my God. That shit triggered me. I did not like that the judge said that. And for me, the validity of everything else that he said after that statement, I kind of just found it difficult to agree with anything else that he said after that statement, because I feel it was highly insensitive. I feel it was an unnecessary thing to say. And I just feel like it shows that he didn't quite understand, like, what it means to live through violence like that. Do you understand what I mean? You don't understand what it does to your brain. You don't understand what it does to your self-esteem, your psyche, your ability to be safe in yourself and to trust in yourself, your ability to... But let's continue. Okay. So he said that it would have helped Sylvia's case if she told the court why she didn't run away when they fell down, right? Like, do you guys hear what this man was saying? Or am I don't, maybe, Okay, let's just continue. He said in a quote, "That does not in any way amount to shifting the burden of proof to her, but it would have helped in determining whether the reaction to the assault that she visited on the deceased was merited." So he basically said that if you told us why you didn't run away after you guys fell down, maybe it would have helped us understand why you stabbed him. But then I'm like, but I just told you that this man has been abusing me. And one time he beat me up so bad that I couldn't go anywhere or do anything for a week straight. And I have an 8-month-old and I have a 3-year-old, I have a toddler and an infant. And for 1 week I cannot move because that's how bad he beat me. And you still want me to justify why I didn't run away when I fell down. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean? I don't understand. Anyway, the judge finds her guilty of manslaughter, stating that the court knew she did not intend on killing him. He said, and I quote, "This court finds that the accused did not intend to kill the deceased, but her negligent act of stabbing him in the chest caused his unfortunate death. The court, exercising the jurisdiction conferred upon it under Section 179 of the Criminal Procedure Code to convict the accused for a lesser cognate offense of manslaughter, even though not charged but proved. The accused person is therefore found guilty of the offense of manslaughter contrary to Section 202 as read with 205 of the Penal Code and is accordingly convicted." So he passed this judgment on the 27th of October 2025, which is about 2 years after the analysis came out. And I tried to find any details of her sentencing, but I couldn't really find any details stating that she had been given her sentence. But unfortunately in Kenya, the charge of manslaughter carries... you can be sentenced up to life for manslaughter. So I really do wish Sylvia well. And yeah, this case, yeah. There is something referred to as battered woman syndrome. And battered woman syndrome is what happens to women who face repeated acts of violence from their partners. And it kind of breaks down the psychology of what happens to the woman when she's constantly facing violence from somebody who, you know, is supposed to be your provider and protector, right? And of course, it doesn't really have to be in heterosexual relationships, because gender-based violence also happens in same-sex relationships, and gender-based violence also happens in two men, right? So sometimes battered woman syndrome is referred to as battered person syndrome, but because gender-based violence disproportionately happens more to women than men, that's when they coined the term battered woman syndrome. And I'm wondering, I'm not really certain, but I'm wondering if her lawyers could have used this as a defense. Can this be used as a defense in Kenya, the battered woman syndrome? I'm not sure. Maybe somebody who's studying or doing law can educate me on this. But if you ask me, in my opinion, I don't think that she deserves jail time. I don't think that she deserves to spend the rest of her life or the next 15, 30 years in jail. I think that this was an act of self-defense. I think that she feared for her life. And I think that in the midst of all that fear and chaos, she did something that she should not have done. He should not have died, right? But it's not like she intentionally decided to kill him, right? I think that she was fighting for her life. And I think that just, you know, it's unfortunate that she ended up stabbing him. But I think it was very unfair for the judge to be like, if you just walked away, if you're just like, don't say shit like that to survivors. Don't start telling them what they should have or should not have done when, like, they were in fear for their lives. Like, because everybody knows, nobody's thinking rationally when somebody's trying to strangle you. Your brain is not thinking logically. Your brain is thinking, how are we going to survive? How am I going to get out of this alive? It's not thinking oh, now we're down. Okay, the most logical thing to do is to run away. Your brain is thinking, how do I neutralize this threat so that I can be saved? So don't tell survivors, this is what you should have done. Don't ask survivors, what did you do to provoke him, to treat, like, don't do shit like that. Don't do that. So I don't think that she deserves any jail time. I don't think that. I think maybe she should have been put on probation, you know? I think that she should have been given some mental health kind of help to help her process what happened. I think that the judicial system should have done a lot more than just punish her, because all they did was punish her. That's all they acknowledged their abuse. They're like, okay, so he used to beat you. Okay, but this time you fell down and tried the opportunity to run away and you didn't run away. So you know what? We're still going to punish you. We're not looking at how has this affected you as a person and what kind of resources do you need to get through this? How has this affected your children? Seeing you just being beat down all the time like that, you know? Like, how can we help you? How can we help them? How can we prevent things like this from happening to other women? Nothing, just asking her why she didn't get up and run away. Ugh. That's it. That is the unfortunate story of Sospeter Opiyo Muganda and Sylvia Atieno Auma. I think both of their stories are just deeply tragic. That's it. That's the episode today. I will link, and this is for anybody out there that maybe needs it and does not know this, Kenya has a gender-based violence hotline that you can call and get help. It's 1195. It's free. And they provide round-the-clock telecounseling and coordinated referral services to GBV survivors, enabling them to access real-time interventions. I will link more resources for anybody who might be in a situation and they don't know where to start and they need help. But I just believe survivors, and hopefully as a country we get to a point where we have systems in place that really do protect the survivors of gender-based violence, and we question and aim to correct the parts of our socialization that make it acceptable for things like GBV to be as prevalent as they are. You know, and if you ask me, one of the best ways to do that is to just, you know, dismantle the patriarchy as a whole, just dismantle every single aspect of the patriarchy. This patriarchy is unnatural, it's man-made, and that's why it's so violent. That's why it's so violent to women, and that's why it's violent to men, the men who protect it and uphold it. The patriarchy does not protect you. The patriarchy does not care about you. You know, the patriarchy sees you as kind of an end product, and it's a very specific end product that you need to be to sustain it, to feed it. And so a lot of men overlook the harm that the patriarchy does to them because the patriarchy has given them this assumed power where you're better than women, you're stronger than women, you're faster than women, blah, 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 you know? And just dismantle the patriarchy as a whole. Let's start over. Let's start the whole thing over. It's not working. It's not making sense. Because any systems that require violence for them to be upheld, for them to thrive, those are not natural systems. Those are not systems that are working for me or you. Those are systems that are designed to keep us in very specific loops, to keep us trapped, to keep us fighting with each other so that we're not looking at the bigger picture. And those are the systems that make it acceptable for somebody to ask you, why didn't you run away from your abuser? What were you wearing when you were raped? If you didn't provoke him, maybe he wouldn't have. That is what those systems do. They don't ask, how can we help? They don't ask, what do you need? They don't ask what resources are missing and how can we implement them in place. They don't ask, what is it about how we socialize men and women, girls and boys in this society that makes it so acceptable for people to feel so comfortable just inflicting pain and trauma and violence on each other. They ask you why you didn't run away. And I think that's just, it's sad. All right, now I'm done. If you've made it to the end of the episode, thank you very much for hanging out with me for these few minutes. I would love to hear your thoughts on this case and just what you think on how it ended. I would also like to hear your thoughts on what the judge said, right? Do you agree with what he said, or do you feel some type of way about it like I do? Because I really do feel some type of way about it. And I could say so much more, but I don't want Anyway, don't forget to follow us on all social media platforms. You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. On TikTok, I am Crimes and Cons KE. On Instagram, I'm Crime and Cons KE. On Facebook, I'm Crime and Consequence KE. You can also find me on Spotify, Apple Podcast, AfriPod, and CastBox. And on, I know that on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, you can give me a 5-star rating. So go ahead and do that. Thank you very much. And share this podcast with a friend of a friend of a friend. And I will see you guys next week. Have a very good Wednesday.